I wanted to introduce you to Matt Simmons, who's going to get up to speak in just a moment. Matt and Joe lead the 9 o'clock service at the Shoreham site. Matt's a dear friend of mine. We've been friends for way over 12 years, long time anyway, and worked together on all kinds of events all over the country, and now have the privilege of working together in this city, but not for long, it seems, because he and Joe are following a sense of calling to go overseas. They're going to move to Amsterdam in Holland this year. And in fact, he'll probably mention this, but we have an Amsterdam Day coming up soon. I forget the date. It's 15th of March. Some of you, you might be thinking, oh, what's that about? Well, if you've any inclination to get involved in pioneering and church planting or traveling in a situation which is new, you might want to come along to it. 15th of March, we'll be gathering people from all over the country to talk about this adventure of church planting into Amsterdam. And for some of you, maybe actually this is the next stage for you. Who knows? Who knows? I'm sure Matt would love it if all of you went. So he's praying for that, I'm sure. But anyway, let's welcome him up as he comes to speak to us, Matt Simmons. Let's go for it. Let's welcome him.
A bit like the Crystal Maze getting on here, isn't it? Yeah. Pesky musicians. Getting on here. Thank you, Christian, Simon. You guys all right? Yeah? Good. I had one of those. Have you guys heard of Barocas, those little things you put in the drink? They fizz. Like a vitamin C sort of thing. Well, I brought some not very good ones. I got some fake ones from Aldi, and I tried the orange flavour, and they weren't very good. So I upgraded and went to the tropical flavour, and I had my first one this morning. And I don't know what it's done to me. I feel a bit weird. It's a bit. I remember as a teenager making the mistakes of mixing cheap cider with Lilt, right? Which is not a totally tropical taste, right? Don't do that. But it tasted this morning exactly like that, and it made me feel a bit peculiar. I found myself in the shower, I started to sing Uptown Girl. Have you ever heard that? I was like, what has happened to me? Very Uptown Girl, living in an uptown world. Really weird. The first time I had a Barocca, a friend of mine, Andy Cross, who some of you might know, I'd never heard of them. I was driving a car, and he was in the passenger seat. I was just driving along. He said, have you heard of these things called Baroccas? Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, all you do is you just put them on your tongue. I'm like, all right. He said, do you want one, Matt? I'm like, yeah, all right. So I'm just driving along, put one on my tongue. Oh, don't do that. That was a mistake. I've never quite forgiven Andy for that. Right, let's get into it. I'm talking from Numbers chapter 10 this morning. So you might want to turn there. It's the fourth book in the Bible, right in the Old Testament. As Joel said, Joe, why don't you stand up? Joe, this is my wife. You can sit down. I just want you to introduce the other. She's great. So we're moving with our four daughters to Amsterdam in probably July, August time. Our oldest is about 8 years old. Our youngest is, she's nearly eight at the end of April. Our youngest is two. She was two at the end of January. So we're moving to plant a new church in Amsterdam, which is incredibly exciting. We've got a small team beginning to join us now. So we've got about, including us, I think there's 11 of us now who said we're definitely going. Not including kids, that's just adults. There's tons of kids, they're everywhere. So it's really exciting that God's already begun to draw people to us. And I found even talking to different people that some of these people that are with us already, they've said, yeah, God began to speak to me about this even 2 or 3 years ago. So it almost feels like God's been birthing this church plant for a while and getting us started. So I'll talk a little bit about it as we go through, I'm sure. And didn't Simon do an amazing job on Thursday night? Wasn't that incredible? I tell you what, that is one of those messages you just want to listen to again and again. Just download it, put it on your whatever you listen to, and just get that into you, because that was such an important message. I remember when I was about 18 hearing Terry Virgo speak on grace from Romans, and I just listened to it about a dozen times because it was just brilliant. It just did me so much good. That's the sort of message you just need to get into again. And it's helpful because it kind of leads into what I'm going to talk about today, because Simon's last point was Jesus commissions you. I don't know if you remember, if you wrote that down. That was his final point. Jesus commissions you. So what I want to do today is look a little bit about that commissioning, about God's call on your life, on our lives, how that works in community, in church, in the people of God. So let me read this from Numbers chapter 10, starting at verse 29. And Moses said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, "We're setting out for the place of which the Lord said, 'I will give it to you.' Come with us, and we will do good to you, for the Lord has promised good to Israel." But he said to him, "I will not go. I will depart to my own land and to my kindred." He said, "Please do not leave us, for you know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you will serve as eyes for us. And if you do go with us, whatever good the Lord will do to us, the same we will do to you." Right, I'm just going to pray. God, we're eager at the start of this day just to hear you speak to us, to hear your voice. God, we want to know your will for us, what you want us to do with our lives, what you want us to do today. We're eager to hear you. I pray, just as we look at this passage, I pray you would speak to us afresh. I pray where there are old dreams in people's hearts, I pray that you would breathe on them afresh this morning. I pray you put faith and strengthen us today. We pray you'd help us. Amen. Amen. So, Moses, you guys, a lot of you, if you're believers here, if you've been around the church for a while, or even just a little bit, you'll probably know a bit of Moses' story. Moses led the people of God out of Egypt, the Israelites. They were slaves in Egypt, and Moses led them out. They went through the Red Sea, and the Red Sea kind of crushed Pharaoh, all that sort of story, and he was leading them to the promised land. It says there that it was called the land, it was called, "I will give it to you." It's God's promised land, the destination for them. But they end up getting stuck in the wilderness, and they grumble and they moan a lot, and they get stuck there for a while. And we kind of join that story somewhere in the middle of that. In the end, it isn't Moses that takes them into the promised land. Joshua and Caleb take them in. But we pick up this story when they're kind of in the wilderness, and Moses approaches this guy called Hobab. And we don't know much about Hobab, because he doesn't really appear anywhere else in the Bible. But Moses appeals to Hobab and says, "Come with us and we will do good to you. Come and join us in this adventure." Hobab's a Midianite, so he's not an Israelite. But Moses said to him, "Come with us and we will do good to you." What happens is that Hobab initially turns him down. He says, "No, I'm all right, thanks. You know, don't worry about it. I'm going to do my own thing instead." So Moses has to kind of appeal to him again, and he gives the same appeal to him again. "Come with us and we will do good to you. Whatever good God does to us, also you will receive in that." That's his kind of appeal to him. And we don't actually know what happens. We don't know if Hobab responds positively or negatively. We kind of presume from the way the passage goes on to read that he does go with them, but we don't actually know. But so what I want to look at this morning is this kind of the calling, kind of Moses calling to Hobab and what he's calling him into. And I want to look at how that works out for us. So all of us, we've all been called the same way that Moses called Hobab. We've all been called by God. We've been called into his family. We've been called out of our kind of slavery to sin. We've been called out of the mess and the sin of our lives. And God's called us into relationship with him. Just like God called the people of God out of Egypt and called them into the promised land. That's what he's done on a personal level for each and every one of us. We've been called out into a relationship with God. And we've been called, if you want to know what God's got for you to do, number one, he's called you to worship for all of us. That's our number one calling, to worship God. That's very clear in the Bible. He's also called us to kind of go on mission, to be commissioned, the great commission at the end of Matthew. God's called us to go and make disciples. That's true for every single one of us. You can't, there's no get out clause on that. We're all part of that. But also you'll find for you that you'll find there's a specific thing that God has for you to do. There's something that God's put on your plate, on your to-do list. And you might know what that is. You might think, "I know exactly what it is. I know exactly what God has for me." Or you might not. But for every single one of you, there's stuff that God has for you to do. And in fact, what you're doing right now is what God has for you to do. So if you're not sure, just look at where you are now, the street you live in, the house, the family you're in, the relationships you've got, the workplace you're in, the course you're studying at university. All of that is part of what God has called you to. That's what God has for you. And we're going to look a little bit about that, about how that works, but how that works in community, because the same way that God called and Moses took the people of God out of Israel, they was on a journey together, and we're on a journey together. All the kind of individual callings and hopes and dreams, we work that out as a community, as a body together. So we're going to look at that. But the interesting thing is that Hobab, as I said, he rejects this offer. So what I want us to do is look at a few ways that we can kind of get sidetracked. Four ways we can sort of do a Hobab and get knocked off course a little bit. Now, Simon helped us really helpfully because he opened up all sorts of stuff in our lives. So what I'm not going to look at is particularly kind of obvious, deliberate sin that can kind of take you out. What I want to look at is some kind of more subtle things that can kind of sidetrack you, particularly as Christians in the church, things that kind of knock you off course. So number one, four ways to do a Hobab. Number one, be over-familiar. Over-familiarity can be a problem. So as far as we can tell, Moses and Hobab are brothers-in-law. They're kind of related. They seem to sort of, you'd imagine they probably know each other if they're brothers-in-law. And it's quite possible Hobab has been around Moses. He's hung out with him a bit. He's hung out with the people of God, the Israelites. He knows they kind of grumble a lot. They're a bit grumpy. They're a bit problematic. He's seen Moses at his best and his worst. He's seen his errors and his mistakes. He's kind of almost a bit over-familiar. And he says, do you know what? What you're saying, you know, that looks okay, but I'd rather just go and do my own thing instead. I'd rather go and hang out with my people. He just wants to go home, basically. And maybe you've been around here. Maybe you've been around CCK for a while. Maybe you grew up here. You were part of the youth group. Or maybe you've just been in church, different churches, but you've been in churches since you were a kid or a long time. And it all feels a little bit just kind of over-familiar. You're used to it. Now, if that's not true for you, if you've been part of the church for barely a couple of weeks or a few months, then just stay with me because this will apply to you as we go on. With each of these points, I want to look at just some symptoms. So some symptoms of being over-familiar is that nothing excites you anymore. Maybe you can relate to that, that nothing in the church just really excites you anymore. You know, Joel will stand up and say, we're going to go and do this, or we're excited about this, or come to this prayer meeting, or we're starting a new preaching series, or whatever, and you just kind of think, yeah, whatever, you know, I've heard it before. You know, your small group leader tries to get you excited about anything, and you just feel a bit kind of dull. You just feel sort of stuck in second gear. Or maybe you just question every decision. Every time we say, we're going to do this as a church, or your small group leader says, let's go this way, let's do this, you just grumble about it, you just question. You've always got a better idea. You've always got a better answer. Maybe it's that the grass always looks greener somewhere else. Other churches, other ministries, other worship albums, other things that you hear, other influences. It looks a bit better there than it does here. Do you know what? The grass is only greener where you water it. I mean, that's just basic horticulture. I mean, everyone knows that, all right? It's just true. Let's not get hung up on that. You'd have to work in Kew Gardens to know that. If you want the grass to be green, you've got to water it. Water where you are. So maybe that's a problem for you, that you've just become a bit kind of over-familiar. You just feel a bit like, I know this kind of too well. I'm just not excited about this anymore. It just doesn't get me going. Now, that doesn't mean you should just leave. I'm not saying all the people who bought here, come to Amsterdam. Be much more exciting there. That's not what I'm saying. If you're over-familiar, it's not that you just need to leave. Maybe that is true for some of you, but probably not. But I think you probably just need to wake up and recognize it. Because that sort of thing can just kind of lull you, and you just don't even know it's happening. You just kind of disappear into this kind of mediocre melancholy of nothingness, and you never really see what's going on. Some of you just need to wake up to that. And the thing is, you probably shouldn't just try and get excited again about the church. Just take like a jab of church. Just get excited about that, because that'll probably just fade after a while. Just get excited about Jesus, about what he's done in your life. And if you're excited about that, you'll just be excited about other things just as a default. If you've got that right, first of all, you'll do okay. So number one, be over-familiar. Second way to do a hobab is to make your family the main thing. So it says in verse 30 that Hobab's kind of initial rejection is, he says, I will not go, I will depart to my own land and to my own kindred, my own people, my own family. Which that might sound a bit familiar to you, because there's a similar story in Luke chapter 9, where Jesus is speaking to some people who he's almost trying to recruit. And it says, to another he said, follow me. But he said, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. And this bit's a bit, just wake up to this bit. Jesus said to him, leave the dead to bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Which, those are pretty strong words. He's just said, look, I just want to go and bury my father, you know, which just seems like a perfectly reasonable request. And Jesus says to him, let the dead bury their own dead. Now, the temptation is, when you read a verse like that, is just to kind of think, well, what Jesus meant to say was something else. Sometimes the best thing to do when you read, particularly something that Jesus says, when you read it and you think that's a bit harsh, the best thing to do is just to read it again. Just basic Bible reading tip. Just go back to it and read it again. That's the first thing you should do. Did Jesus really say that? Read it again. Yes, he did. Okay. And then from there, work it out. Because otherwise you'll just run past it and you think, well, Jesus was just exaggerating or whatever, and you can just miss it. But we need to hear what Jesus was saying. And the thing is, he's not saying it's a bad thing to bury a parent. Though in the culture at the time, the whole burial process could actually take up to a year. From first of all burying them, and then they do weird stuff with their bones, and it could take like a whole year. So it could kind of sidetrack people a bit. What Jesus is doing, he's teaching the priority of the kingdom of God over family life, right? He's confronting something in the culture at the time where family was the most important thing. So I'm not saying family isn't important, because it is. And there's loads of other places in the Bible where we see that. But Jesus is saying the most important thing is not your family or your friends or your mum and dad or your kids. He's just saying it's just not the most important thing. Because what happens is that that for lots of people, family does become the most important thing. And when something becomes the most important thing, that basically means it's become a god to you. You know, because it's become an idol. And we can think of idolatry as bad things, but not necessarily. Idolatry can be something that's good, but it becomes a god thing, a good thing that becomes a god thing, and then it becomes a bad thing, it becomes an idol. So money is a good thing. But yet, if that's the most important thing in your life, it's become a god to you, that's bad. The same with sex. Sex is a good thing, created by God. But if that becomes the most important thing, if that's the thing that guides and governs you, that's a bad thing. And it's exactly the same for family. If it becomes the most important thing, that's a problem. So it's a warning for us. And it's a warning not just that, it's not that Jesus is just confronting an ancient culture and we can just kind of look in on it. Jesus isn't confronting us now, because family can become a big deal for us. So for us as the Simmons family about to move to Amsterdam, If we made that decision solely based on what was good for our family, we wouldn't go. Just we wouldn't. We wouldn't, because our kids are happy. They're in a school that they like. We like the neighborhood we're in. We're in a great church that we love. We've got lots of friends. Everything's great. You know, we're financially secure. Everything's thumbs up good. If we made that decision solely based on what was best for our family, we wouldn't go. We just wouldn't. We just wouldn't do it. We've been seeking lots of advice on how to make this move, and we had a Skype call with a lady who advises families moving from England and America who are moving to Holland. And so, we'll do that. And she was giving us some advice, and she's asking us about our kids and schooling. And she said, particularly for your older kids, she said it could be really traumatic what you're about to do. That was her warning to us. And that can kind of affect you, those sort of words. But do you know what? I want to believe something bigger for my family than that sort of thing. I want to have a big vision for my family life. I don't want to just get put off by silly statements like that. I want to have a big vision for what God can do in our family. some symptoms of this is that maybe you take time out of church life to focus on your marriage or your relationships or your kids. I know a lot of you here probably don't have kids, but just bear this in mind for the future. Probably many of you aren't married anyway, either, but we can do that. Even for yourself, you think, I just need to take a season out of church. Just take a season out. I just need to focus on this for a while. That can be a symptom of this, that we've made family the most important thing. Maybe you'd never expose your marriage or your family to any sort of risk. You wouldn't do that. Even if God told you to do it, you just wouldn't do it. Or maybe if you do have kids, maybe they just dictate what happens. They just kind of, they run the household, they run the family, because they make all the decisions. Now, sometimes it is right for us to stop and prioritize certain things, but in general, that's not a good thing to do if you're constantly just taking time out to sort out a mess in your family. Although, you know, sometimes we have to sort out a mess. This story isn't really related, but I'll tell you anyway. But I was giving my kids a bath, as you do as a parent. And I think I've got four. We don't normally put four in the bath. That's chaos. So two of them in the bath, and Joe was downstairs, and there's two in the bath. And one of them did a poo, which that happens sometimes when you give kids a bath. You know, they just go. Fortunately, it was a floater. Anything worse than that would have been terrible. I want to give you a tip for when many of you have kids, or if you've got them already. Here's a bit of advice. If your child does a poo in the bath, the thing to do is to pick up the children and remove them from the bath, all right? Take them out of the contaminated area. Just get them out as quick as you can, all right? Unless it is a non-floater, it's a bit messy, and then just run. Just get out of there. But if you can, just remove the kids from the bath. What you don't want to do is what I did, all right? Some of you guessed. What I did was I picked up the poo. Yeah, kids in the bath. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'm going to pick up the poo. I just picked it up. I'm just holding it there. What do I do now? Joe! And so Joe comes right up and says, why are you holding a poo? I don't know why I'm holding a poo. He says, I'm holding a poo. And everyone's screaming. The kids are screaming because Dad's holding a poo. Why is Dad holding a poo? It was just utter chaos. So I don't actually know what happened. I can't remember. I blanked it from my memory. It was too traumatic. I don't know what happened. But there you go. Don't pick up the poo. Number one lesson. Where were we? Right, family. Okay, look, this can be a really subtle thing, but you know what, I've seen, and you might think, well, this doesn't matter to me because I'm not married, I don't have kids, but I've seen too many people kind of your age who it's not even just family, but it will be when university gets a bit tough or you get your first job and suddenly the demands hit you, or maybe when you get married or when you do have kids, all of a sudden they just sort of disappear, all right, that happens so much, people just kind of drift away. Because that's become the most important thing. I've just got to devote my time to this now. And what God's got for you, what he's called you to, just kind of takes a back seat. And you think, well, I'll just put it there for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and it just stays there on the shelf. All your passion for Jesus and his kingdom just stays on the shelf, and you never really get back to it again. So that was the second one. The third one is... It's a bit of an odd one, is that you want to follow your calling. You can kind of miss your calling by wanting to follow your calling. All right, some of you could miss out on what God has for you because you become so consumed with what God has for you. I'm going to explain this. It will make sense. Again, I guess it's going back to the thing of idolatry, is that the thing you feel called to kind of becomes the goal. That becomes totally what you're all about. And you only do that, and you don't actually live for anything else. You're so consumed with achieving that one thing, and you get so kind of tunnel vision about doing that, that you miss out. You can kind of lose what everything else that God has. Some symptoms of this might be you only like this church because its vision is in line with your vision. Or maybe if this church didn't want to do what you wanted to do, you'd leave. Maybe you've already made that decision. There's something that I'd quite like to see happen, but if this church doesn't do it, I'm just going to leave. I'll find one that does instead. Maybe you think that. Now, obviously, I guess the obvious thing to say is that, look, just as we were saying before, it's an issue of idolatry. You just need to worship Jesus instead, which is true. Sometimes to facilitate that, you need to put down this thing, that this calling. You need to just lay it down and just entrust it to God and say, well, I'm just going to put that over there for a while. A friend of mine was he was a leader in a church. He was a youth leader in a church, and he was approached by kind of a New Frontiers big bug. New Frontiers is like the family of churches we're kind of widely involved with, and he was approached by this big bug guy and said, I want you to go move to this city and plant a church. And this guy said, great. And he had four conditions. I can't remember all four of them. The first one was, I'll do it as long as my leaders here in this church are happy. And this second one was that his wife were happy. And there are two more I can't remember. But he didn't get past the first one because he went and spoke to his lead elder and said, I feel this guy's asked me to go and move here. I feel it's the right thing to do. I want to do it. What do you think? His lead elder, these word for word what he said, he looked him in the eye and said, you have to die to this. That's what he said to him. You have to die to this. That was it. He just said, look, it's not right. It's too soon. For all sorts of reasons, this isn't the right thing for you to do. You have to die to it. That was his instruction. So he did. Bless him, he did. He just thought, well, I can't just go and do it now. So he put it on the shelf and he entrusted it to God and said, if this is what God really has for me, then at the right time, God will bring it back. And some of you just need to do that. You've become so consumed with one thing. Maybe you've even bickered and argued with some leaders here about it. Maybe you've even grumbled and you think, I just want to do that thing. And you know, I know there are people in this room, I've spoken to actually people in this room, who that God has called you to do one thing, but they've really graciously said, I'm going to put that aside for a while. I'm just going to serve this vision, this church. I'm just going to do this. And if that's right, God will bring it back at the right time. And they don't know when that is, but they've just trusted God for that. It's brilliant. Some of you just need to do that. So there we go. Four ways to do a Hobab. Number four, it's too hard. It's too hard. In Hebrews, it talks about the people of God in the wilderness. There's a couple of verses in Hebrews chapter 3. It says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. That's it talking about the people in the wilderness on the day of testing in the wilderness. What happened to the people of God is that they were going towards the promised land and their hearts got hard because it was too hard for them. They were tested in the wilderness. That's what it says. On the day of testing in the wilderness, their hearts got hard and they blew it because it was just too difficult. That's what they felt like. This is just too much. We just can't do it anymore. It talks about it in Numbers 14. So a few chapters on from this story of Moses and Hobab. So Joshua and Caleb have just gone in with the spies into the promised land to check it out, to see what it's like. They come back and bring a report to the people. They say, it's good, but we're going to have to fight a few battles to get there. And this is how the people of God respond. It says, then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in this wilderness. Why does the Lord bring us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? And then this last verse is just shocking. Verse 4. And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. That's what they decided to do. Can you imagine that? Do you understand what they've just said there? They'd been in slavery in Egypt, right? They weren't in control of their lives. They were beaten, they were whipped, they were abused. And God's rescued them out. This wonderful Exodus story where God saved them out. And they're saying, actually, I'd rather live in that. That's their response. I'd rather just go back to being in slavery, to living in that state. That's an incredible response. But the thing is that we can do that as well. We can do that. You know, we can think, oh, they're silly Israelites, silly people. But we can make the same response as well. Maybe you've even done it since Thursday, Simon's amazing message about redemption. And yet you've already almost kind of gone back to Egypt. You've already felt like, oh, it's just, you know what, that's just so much more attractive living that way. Just living in that sin, just enjoying that. It's just so much more attractive. And you've already kind of just gone back. Or we can do that sometimes. Just life's just, sometimes being a Christian is just hard. Sometimes being part of a church, sometimes being part of this church is hard. And we can think, do you know what? It would just be easier if I was just like a normal person like everyone else. It would just be easier if I didn't give my money to the church. I just spent it on myself instead. I'd have more time. You know, wouldn't it be great on a Sunday if I could just go to B&Q and buy some wood and build some stuff? That's not true for me because I'm awful at DIY. It's just a disaster zone around me. My house is just bits of stuff falling off everywhere, which is where I've tried to fix stuff. Don't do that. But we can sometimes, when we just get stuck in the hardness of the Christian life, think, like the Israelites did, I'd rather just go back. But the thing is that what God's called us to is supposed to be hard, all right? It's supposed to be. That's just part of the deal. God's called us to live for him, and that it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. Do you know, if the thing that God has called you to do, if it feels a bit easy to you, it's probably not the right thing. Just go and ask God again. Ask him again. God, give me something else to do. Now, it's all right to have goals to aspire to. So Joel will often talk about in this church, we want to reach pagan men. We believe that's one huge way this city will get changed, if pagan men get saved and they find Jesus. And Joel will talk about, he'll encourage us to pray for hundreds, not thousands or tens of thousands, but hundreds. And he's making a point that it's good to have things for us to aspire to, next steps for us to go after in prayer or to go after in kind of activity and energy. But ultimately, if the overall vision you have, if the big vision is just too small, then just ask God again. Say, God, give me something else. And maybe as a symptom of this way to do a Hobab, of it being too hard, maybe this morning you've looked at what Joe and I are doing. I'm not saying this to show off, but you've looked at what we're doing and you think, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do what you guys are doing. Maybe you thought that. Now, God does give grace for people to do certain things. I look at what some people do and I think, I can't do what you do because God's given you a grace and an ability to do that. And God has given me and Joe and our family a grace in this season to make this move. But if you're always looking at things and saying, oh, I can't do that, it's too hard, you know, just, it's supposed to be hard, all right? God wants you to rest and lean into him. It's supposed to be hard because you can't do it. He wants you to trust him that he will give you the strength to do it so that the glory goes to him and not to you. God wants you to trust in him for the things that he's called you to. It is just hard, but, you know, what else are you going to do with your time? Seriously, what else are you going to do with your time? What else are you going to do with your money? You know, for us, for church planting, one of the issues we've got to face is raising some money. It's an expensive place to live. We've got to find money to do that. So I went on this, I Googled raising money for church plants. And I found this podcast, How to Raise Money for Your Church Plant. I thought, all right, I'll listen to this, solve all my problems. And I did. 45 minutes long. The first half an hour of this talk, How to Raise Money for Your Church Plant, the first half an hour, the point he made is that the first place you'll find the money is yourself. I was like, hold on a second. But that's the point. It's like, for us as a family, this will cost us in lots of ways, but even financially, it's going to cost us. Now, that doesn't mean we're not being wise stewards of our money. It doesn't mean we're not just going to waste money and be silly. We're going to make wise steps. But do you know what? I'd rather spend my money on serving God and his kingdom than on other things where it's not, basically. What else are you going to do with your money? Throw it into God's kingdom. Invest it in his kingdom. Don't just invest it in silly things. Invest it in God. Right. So four ways to do a Hobab. Let's look at it in a more positive sense now. I want to look at four ways to live out your calling. Four ways to follow the call of God. So this is kind of, how do we not do a Hobab? And you'll notice there'll be a bit of a contrast here in that with Hobab, the first four things are all very individual things. That's what Hobab says. He says, I will return to my land, to my people. It's all very individual. Whereas Moses' call to Hobab is a corporate thing. He's saying, come and join us. Come and join what we're doing. So the first of these, four ways to follow the call of God. Number one, get into community. get into a community and serve it. So it says, as I said, verse 32, if you do go with us, whatever good the Lord will do to us, the same we will do to you. There's a blessing of being in community, of working out your Christian life, what God has for you, doing it together. That's the way it's supposed to be done. And there's a blessing in that. When God blesses us as a community, you get blessed at the same time. And this community is what Hobab was called into, what we're called into. This is God's plan, all right? This is God's plan for the world is the church. It's the people of God. That's how he wants us to make a difference in the world, is us together doing it. It's not about superstars or one-off people. It's about us doing it together. The Bible talks about the church, us as a body, in 1 Corinthians 12. We're the body. We're the people of God together. You know, there's a thumb and a head and an armpit and a toe. We are. We're all part of this body. But the thing about this body is that, I heard a preacher say this recently, I'm going to steal his quote. It might sound a bit weird, but just stay with me. But the body, right, is the manifestation of the dreams of the heart. That might not make any sense. I'll say that again. The body is the manifestation of the dreams of the heart. So that works on a personal level. So David Beckham, you guys know David Beckham, football player, right? If you ever see an interview with David Beckham, most of the time he ends up talking about when he was an 11-year-old boy. Have you ever noticed this? Happens a lot. So recently he's just brought a football club in America, and he talked about how this is something he dreamed about doing when he was a kid. I've seen interviews with him when he's talking about scoring free kicks for England, and he's always talking about these dreams he had as a kid. That's exactly right. He had dreams as a kid of what he wanted to do in his life, and he's kind of manifested that out with his body. He's done it, you know. That happens in Amsterdam. You see, if you get the Friday morning flight into the city, you land at Schiphol Airport, and the plane is just full of young men, kind of your age, my age, probably more your age than my age, but young men who they're going to Amsterdam, and they want to live out the manifestation. They want to manifest out the dream of their heart. And their dream for that weekend is to have sex and smoke marijuana. That literally, for plane loads of people flying in on a Friday morning, that is what they want to do. That's their dream. That's their idol. That's the thing that they worship. And they go and do it. The body is the manifestation of the dreams of the heart. But in a corporate sense, that's true as well. Right? God's heart for this city, for us here in Brighton, God's heart for this city is worked out through us. Through us. So let me make this real for you. If you're in this room and you're a graphic designer, for instance, or you want to be a graphic designer, that's because that's something that's on God's heart and he wants to work that out. Does that make sense? So he wants you to, not only, he wants you to reach other graphic designers because that's on his heart. He wants you to produce designs that glorify him, that worship him. He wants you to be loving and faithful in your workplace. And that's something that's on his heart. That's why you're here. If you're here and you're in business, or you're a student, or you're a nursery nurse, whatever it is, that's because God's got a heart for that community that you're called to or you're part of. That's why you're here in this room. It's because it's something that's on God's heart that he wants to work out. We had for our little Amsterdam church, fledgling church, we run like an online small group because we're all, the 11 of us who are committed to being involved, we all live in different places. So every other week, we kind of hook in via Google Hangouts. So we have this little video chat, six different little screens. We're all waving at each other. It's not great, but it will do for the time being until we're all there in the city in one place. And this week, Jo asked the group a question. She just said, look, what it would be great if we could all just say a few things that we want to see happen. A few passions that God's laid on us for this church plant. Let's just share some of our dreams together. And it was just beautiful. People just went round and just shared what God had put on their heart. It was just amazing. And one of those stories was a friend of mine. Let me just take a drink. A friend of mine, or friends of mine, Tom and Chloe, who were from London, who were moving with us. He's a writer. She's an illustrator. And they just said, look, we just want to reach creative people. God's put it on our heart. We just want to reach writers. Because I'm a writer, that's what I want to do. But just see how that works. It's this God's That's obviously on his heart. It's on God's heart. It's on his heart for Amsterdam. So he's put this couple in our group because he wants to work it out. And my friend Tom can do that by getting to know other writers. But he can also do that just by writing and just doing that really well. So he's written a book that I just read. He's an author and he writes for children between the ages of kind of 10 and 14-ish. And I read his most recent book. It was absolutely brilliant. He's not a Christian writer at all. He just writes books for kids, so that's it. And he doesn't write explicitly in any way about his Christian faith. But all the way through it, he just weaved in these themes of hope. The story was about an 11-year-old girl whose brother had died. And the whole story is from when his brother first dies, and it just sees the next few months of what happens in our life. It just works out this beautiful story of God comforting those who mourn. It doesn't talk about God, it doesn't talk about Jesus, but it kind of seeds in this just gospel value of hope and redemption. And now school kids read this book, and they get to read a book about hope. They get to read a book with like a gospel value in it. I read a review in it last week, a review of this book in the Guardian newspaper. It's just his book's getting out there. And for some of us, that's just how we do it. That's how we'll change culture, not by just writing. He's not going to do it by writing theological books, because that's not for him. That might be for some of you, but that's not for him. For him, he wants to write books for kids, and he's using that to kind of weave in these gospel values that will just, bit by bit, can gently shape our culture. And that's, you know, that's kind of how we'll do it. So, number one, four ways to follow the call of God. Get in community. Number two, just love people. It's really simple. We can think up of all sorts of grand ways that we can follow the call of God, of grand ways we can reach people, huge apologetic arguments, which is appropriate. That's not a bad thing. But ultimately, we've just got to love people. Do you know, that's what I want my daughters to be. I just want them to love people and be faithful. All right. I'm not training them to be world beaters. I'm not saying you've got to be the best at that. You've got to excel at that. You've got to be amazing at that. And maybe there's some things they will excel. They will be amazing. Maybe they will. And I'll encourage them in that. But what I want them ultimately is just to be loving and faithful. Because that's what God wants us to be like. And because for us as a church, as a community, to see change in our culture, in this city of Amsterdam, the way we'll see change is one person at a time. Just by us loving people bit by bit. You know, and just our cities need it. You know, because a lot of them don't know community like this community. They just don't know it. They don't know a community of love and trust and acceptance. They've just got no idea, no idea. So in Amsterdam, 45% of the properties are single residence. This means people living alone, nearly half the city. It has the first singles-only dining restaurant in the world. So you can go there and just have a meal by yourself. That's the sort of city this is. And Brighton is incredibly similar in many ways. And we're surrounded by people who they're searching for just love and reconciliation and acceptance. They're just searching for it. And we've got it. Here, we've got it. We can offer it to them. We can offer it to them. A friend of mine, when I got my first job when I was 18, I did data entry for a year. Oh, man. So numbers from a bit of paper onto a computer. Just horrible. I did it for a year. And I made friends with a guy who was a couple years older than me who was getting married. And I was an usher at his wedding. And then I moved away for a year and then came back and got a different job. And he was in a different job and we didn't really connect. So it was before the days of Facebook, so we didn't really keep in touch. And I'm not very good at keeping in touch anyway. So it was about 18 months until I saw him again. And by that point, he would have been married for 2 years. But I came back and discovered he got divorced. It just all fallen apart. And the thing was, he didn't have any sort of community network around him. I'm not saying if I'd been around, I would have made the difference. I don't think I would have done. But all he had was his parents, who were a bit odd. His brother, who was his best man, who was an idiot. And he just was. And then he had his wife and her family. And that was their support network. That's all they had. So when they started, and I remember talking it through with him and trying to talk through some of the problems they've been through, and it was just like regular, just got married issues. You know, just if you get married the first year, things are going to come up, and you just got to work it out, right? It's just But in the church here, we get to do that with people, and we get to ask people who are a little bit further down the track, or people who are a long way down the track, and say, how does this work? You know, just, she wants to spend money, I want to save money. What's that about? And I thought that was an issue for us. But you just got to work it out. You just got to figure it out. It's just, they're not big things, but they can become big things if you don't sort it out. But he didn't have any way of doing that. He just didn't know how to do it. He had no support network to help him. And that's, for so many people around us, that is just true. That's just, they just don't have the networks. Some friends of ours have just, they're just about to start adopting. A brilliant story. And they've got two kids of their own. They're just about to start adopting. And it's a really rigorous process to get the authorities to say yes to that, particularly in Brighton. Particularly if you're a Christian, they work you really hard to test you. And in a good way as well, they ask some brilliant questions. But it's quite a long journey. But one of the things that most surprised the adoption people were that for this couple was their support network was just vast because they were in a church. So for most people, that's one of the questions I'll ask them. What's your support network? If you've got a problem with one of these kids that's put in your care, who do you turn to? And most people will list, this person, and my mum and dad. And that's kind of normally the case. But for these friends of ours, their support network was just vast. They just kept on going. Well, we could turn to that person, and blah, blah, blah. This person babysits for us. This person cooks food for us. And there's a huge, that's what happens in church life. There's just this community around us where we love each other and support each other. And so many people in our city just don't have that. And we've got this wonderful community to offer people. So love people and be faithful. Third of all, serve. Because the thing is, for Hobab, what his most likely role, the thing that Moses asks him to do, is kind of a bit mundane. He's asked him to be their guide, their kind of navigator. He basically says, we need to get to the promised land. You know, I've heard a rumor that you know how to get there, so could you just help us get there? He's not calling him to be kind of a warrior or to go and fight and beat people up or to be their worship leader or whatever or their conference speaker. He's not saying that. He's just, it's a pretty mundane role he offers him. But for us, most of the things we do in the kingdom of God, most of the things we do in this church will be pretty much like that. It will be pretty mundane, to be honest. Most of our most spiritual moments are kind of void of any sense of adrenaline or any sense of spirituality or transcendence. Occasionally, sometimes we do things and we think, wow, God was so with me in that moment. That was amazing. Most of the times, it's just not like that. It's just working it out. It's just grinding it out. It's just serving God, just being faithful. And that's just the life that God's called us to. And the thing is that we can sometimes get lulled into this idea that we're supposed to kind of be like history makers. You know, if you've been to any sort of teenage Christian event, you've probably sung that song, which is not a bad song. There's nothing wrong with aspiring that God will use you to make history. But for some of us, we just kind of want to make our own history a little bit. And Jesus has got a few warnings about that. He says in Matthew chapter 6, when he's talking about prayer, just before he talks about the Lord's Prayer, he says, when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, that they may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. You know, if you want to be seen by others, you'll receive that. You'll get that. But that'll be all it is. That'll be your reward. That's it. So if you've got a sense of calling, a sense of purpose, but kind of wrapped in it all is a sense to be seen, to be acknowledged, to be known. You might get that, but that'll be it. You'll have received your reward in that moment. You'll get a bit of adulation, a bit of fame. End of. Jesus says something else about greatness. He says in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus called them to him, he's talking about his disciples. He said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. I guess my point is that Moses didn't call Hobab to be great. He just called him to, look, we'll do you good. He's not saying if you come with us, you're going to get greatness. He's just saying there's goodness here. It's a different thing. That's true for us. For us, many of us, the greatest thing we can do is just to serve, and God will do good to us. And we've got all these dreams of what could happen and stuff, but sometimes we just need to get in and serve. And sometimes that's just serving what someone else believes in, following someone else's vision, following someone else's dream. Just putting your bricks in that bucket, just going after that thing instead. I'm just going to serve that vision. I'm just going to give myself to that. I'm not bothered about whether I ever get seen or not. Our church, this church is just full of people like that. They just don't care about being seen. They just couldn't give a stuff, but they're just totally behind the vision, and they've given everything. They've kind of put aside their own personal preferences, their own desires to be famous. They've just said, I'm just going to work to get behind Joel and the elders here, get behind this church's vision, and just serve it hard. The thing is, look, there aren't many, there's no more pages in the Bible. You know, you're not going to get in there, all right? My daughter said that to me recently. She said, Daddy, when we move to Amsterdam, are they going to put us in the new Bible? Which, as any good father would respond, I said, of course they will. They're not. There isn't going to be a new Bible. Okay, just so you're on the same page as that. And the fourth way, the final way, is that it's a, as I've just been saying, goodness, not greatness. What will change this world is not one or two individuals just out there doing this stuff. It's just a whole army of us just working out good together. I've been reading a book recently about cholera, waterborne diseases in Victorian England to fascinate me. So I was reading this book about cholera. And it's a brilliant book. It's about kind of how movements spread, but they focus on cholera. And he talks about the epidemic of cholera. And this quote really stuck out from me. It says, epidemics create a kind of history from below. They can be world-changing, but the participants are almost inevitably ordinary folk following their established routines, not thinking for a second about how their actions will be recorded for posterity. So cholera is just, it spreads because people contract the disease and then they go to the toilet, and then if you drink that, you've got a problem. It's a waterborne virus. And in Victorian England, when the sewers weren't very good, that the water was contaminated, just like my kids in the bath, and that's how the disease spread. That's how cholera spreads. And his point is, it's just ordinary people, and they didn't have to do anything special. They were just living out their life, just humdrum doing their stuff. But by doing that, by just going to the toilet and it spreading, an epidemic started and spread all over London, all over the world. And that's how epidemics start. Just people, us, just going about our lives, faithfully serving God, being in community, serving hard, loving people and being faithful. If we can all do that, we could change this city. We could change this nation. We could see change happen. We really could, just by people working it out. So in Amsterdam, for instance, one of the massive problems, which I'm probably sure you're aware of, is the red light district. That's a massive issue. 800 prostitutes working there most days. It's a horrible place. And there's a need, obviously, for kind of direct social action, people just to get in there and to serve. But ultimately, that might not be the thing that stops the red light district, that stops it from happening. Partly it will be by lots of men getting saved and not wanting to go there anymore. That'll be one way. But it will also just be changing how people think about it even as well. So one of the problems is that the cultural elite in the city, they believe that the red light district expresses some of their liberality, some of their freedom. We've got freedom to do whatever we want. Therefore, we must have this red light district because it shows off how free we are. That's genuinely what people believe. That's what people with influence and power in that city believe. They do. That's what they believe. So one way we can change that is, for instance, my friend Tom writing his books and just seeding in gospel values that actually say something else, that brings change. Because if you get lots of people, just bit by bit, just living out the gospel, don't necessarily, I'm not saying you shouldn't tell people about Jesus, you should, but sometimes it's just living out what God's put in us, so he just lives it out in writing his books, just living it out, and bit by bit, we could see change. We could. Because in Amsterdam, only about 1% of people go to church. Here in Bryn, it's probably 3 or 4%, but really small. It wouldn't need to be that much more, because what, 3%, 4% of people in this city, well, that's one in every 25 or something. Is that right? I don't know. It's a small number. So in your office, there's probably not any other Christians, for instance, or on your university course, there's probably not many others. You know, in your class in sixth form, whatever, there's probably not many others. But it only needs that percentage to notch up a few more levels, and there'll be a few more people there. And then all of a sudden, if we could get one Christian in every university course, in every workplace, in every pub, in every street in our city, just one, in all of those places, and they start living it out, serving, being faithful, loving, and slowly, bit by bit, that just begins to shift the culture. We could change how people think just by faithfully living it out, like this cholera epidemic just spreading, just ordinary folk doing their daily stuff spreads an epidemic. That's what God has for us. That's what God has for the church, for us just to slowly work it out bit by bit and change the cities of Europe. That's what we're believing for Brighton and beyond. That's what God's put on our heart as a church. He said to us, that was the prophetic word that we're kind of following, that God was going to give us like 5 smooth stones, like from 1 Samuel 17 when David takes on Goliath. 5 stones, 5 cities in Europe to take out the Goliath, which was the giant of human secularism. Which, if you think about that, that's ridiculous. That's massive. That's a huge vision, way beyond anything we could achieve. You know, if that happened, the whole world would know that. Everybody would notice. But yet, that's what God said to us. So, you know, that's what I want to go after. And we will do that by not me, definitely not, and not Joel or Simon, but all of us together. I know that can sound a bit twee, you know, we'll do it together, but we will do it together. That's what the church is for. Just this body manifesting the dreams of God's heart for our city and the cities of Europe. All right, let me pray. God, we thank you that you've called us out, like Moses called out Hobab. You've called us all out. You've called us out of our depravity and our mess, and you've called us into a relationship with you. We're so thankful for that. We thank you that you've called us into reconciliation, into relationship with you, but you've called us into a great mission as well. You've called us to live something out, to live out your calling, to live out the dreams of your heart. You've called the people of God to go and do that. And we just want to declare to you together that we're in, that we'll do it. You know, even when it's hard and it's tough, and even when we get let down and we're just disillusioned, we just want to say we're in. God, we're in. We want to serve you. You know, we don't know how Hobab responded, but we don't want to turn our backs on this. We want to say we're in. We want to follow you, Jesus. We want to run after your purposes. We want to run after your big vision and your plans. I pray, Holy Spirit, just right across this room, you just birth that in our hearts, Lord. You just put it in our hearts. I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna need God's help. I'm gonna need to rest in His strength and all that He can do that I can't do. But I pray, just do that, Holy Spirit, right now across this room. Help our hearts just to respond. God, just ask that we just stand up together. Just open your hearts to God. I'll just carry on praying. God, I just pray that right now, as everyone's just standing together. I pray, you just drop this in people's hearts. You just put in a big vision for what you want to do in this city, what you want to do in Europe, what the church can accomplish. We're not just hidden away in some back room, just pretending that the world doesn't exist, just singing our own songs, ignoring them. You've called us to something much greater than that, something much more challenging than that, but something greater than that, Lord. And we just want to say we're in. We're in, Father. I pray just birth that in our hearts right now. Yeah. Give people just specific callings, just dreams of, I want to reach that group of people. I want to reach my office where I work. I want to reach my family, the people you put around me, I pray. Where people have had old dreams and they've just put it away and they've just locked it away, I pray just birth it again. Just breathe life on it again. Holy Spirit, right across this room. Open people's ears, open their hearts to what you have for them, Jesus.